call the April 11th meeting of Ways and Means to order. Can I have approval of the March 14th meeting?
Second.
Second.
Discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. Before I go to the pro tem, I just want to take a couple out of order. I have a motion to adopt resolution number 193. The Tapmar project.
Can you read the title, please?
Sorry?
Can you read the full title?
Amending capital project number 677, Golden Hill Transportation Improvements, amending 2024 capital project budget. Second?
Second.
Discussion? I question 195, which we'll get to, that's the actual contract expense. I guess it'll be, to me, it seems like a lot of money. I don't know if we should be addressing it to, yes.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, we did have an estimate for this project. It was, the engineering estimate was in the $63,000 to $65,000 range. We had three bidders. They range from $108,000 as the low to $179,000 as the high. We do have a memorandum from the design engineer that basically recommends the award to the lowest bidder as being a responsible bidder and being consistent with respect to the bid prices associated with this. It's, you know, it's when you bid these things and you get the numbers, it's, we're all, I think we'd all somewhat concerned about what these numbers are, but it is a legitimate bid and they had a substantial amount of time to bid it, and we did get a lot of questions about it.
Is this time sensitive in any way that if we said no, could send this back out to bid, this is too high, is it going to?
So the time sensitive nature of this has to do with the project that is coming behind it, which is a affordable housing project. This project has to be up and operating prior to them pulling a building permit for that project. Let me correct myself. I don't know whether it's prior to building or prior for, I know it has to be up and operating. It's tied with that, with that particular project.
This is the gate on Glen Street?
This is the gate on Glen Street, that's correct.
I was in the impression years ago we were told that Penrose was going to be paying for this gate. And it's not that, I mean, it's not a real, it's not a big piece of technology here. Is there any way we could do this in-house on some level through DPW?
You're asking a question from the planning department, which is not the DPW departments. The equipment here is probably in the neighborhood of $40,000, and then there's electrical work to be done, et cetera. That question was put, and the decision was made to go out to bid. Relative to this, I would want to address the comment that Penrose was supposed to pay with that. That's not my understanding of where we were on this. This gate was promised to the residents of Glen Street and others as it relates to the prior administration trying to deal with some of the traffic issues associated with it. And it wasn't promised. Penrose did not have a part in this. Penrose has a part in the signal on the other side with respect to Route 32.
Yeah, through the chair to Planner Doyle. So Penrose isn't part of this. How come they can't pull their permits until we pay for this?
So what ends up happening is that the think of it in terms of a timing perspective, the promise of the gate and effort associated with it was done by the prior administration, and it was done to relieve a transportation issue that wasn't addressed or wasn't appropriate. That wasn't part of the Penrose work that was going to be done. It was addressing an existing complaint from the residents on Glen Street in terms of traffic moving up, particularly to the nursing facility. And that's why the administration promised the gate. When this went through the approval process at the city tacked on those requirements with respect to Penrose. But originally and separately, there was a promise by this administration, by a prior administration, that we would solve this problem, which is why it A has now been essentially part of the Penrose project, but it's not originally proposed by Penrose or included in Penrose work because the county had essentially said that they were going to build this gate.
follow-up? Are either of these roads, two roads, a county road?
Well, in the definition, there's a city road, which is Glen Street. County-owned Golden Hill Drive, is it a, quote, county road? No, it is a county-owned driveway.
We maintain it.
That's correct.
Yeah, so we discussed this in Public Works, and as I recall, this is a gate that will be electronically controlled by or accessed by emergency vehicles. So I don't think this is a project that could be done in-house. It will have pretty sophisticated electronics involved with it. And we did discuss in the committee whether or not going back out to bid on this would likely result in lower bids, and given the range of the bids that we've had and prices somewhat stable, but if they're going any direction going up, we did not think that it would benefit to require this to go back out to bid.
Okay. I'm just going to note my frustration again at the cost, and second frustration now hearing from Planner Doyle that this is all as a result of the prior administration's promise for something that we now are left holding the bag with work on. All right, any other discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Carried. 194, can I have a motion?
Motion.
Second?
Second.
Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Aye. Carried. 195, can I have a motion?
Motion.
Second?
Second.
Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Aye. Carried. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Controller's office, guys are up.
Thank you. Do you mind if we have Elena sit at the table?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. We have actually the computer set up down here. For
So thank you very much for hosting us today. I want to just express appreciation both to the Ways and Means Committee and the full legislature for creating the position of quality analyst in our office in the 23 budget. We wanted to come and give you an update, and I also wanted to say that that Elena has worked extremely hard over the last year, and we're really excited about our ability to present very complicated information to you today. So we do expect feedback and questions going forward. And I'm going to turn it over to Elena to lead you through the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you all so much for having me here today. So I kind of want to dive in and kind of just tell you about the selection process as to how we got these 55 contracts that were in the report that was sent to you. So we started with a universe of 2,459 open contracts within the county's financial system. We had identified 1,205 contracts that needed to be closed in the financial system, and they still have not been. Those contracts had expired, and in some cases never had any spend on them as well. From the original grouping, we selected contracts that serve the 2022 year to ensure a complete year of reporting. When we started to compile the list of contracts, we reviewed active invoicing, past invoicing, contracted services, and agencies that were contracted by multiple departments. From that list, we had 79 contracts that were chosen from 11 departments. This list includes 42 agencies. Departments were reached out to in the fall, with some being able to fill the request within a week, while three other departments took between a month and 3 months to respond to the request, and one agency was not able to send any reports to fill. From that 79, we then cut it down to the 55 that was presented to you just for breath of space. So when we're looking at the report that was sent to you, I want to kind of go over how you want to read it, because it's a lot of data and a lot of information. First, there's an index of contracts organized by agency. Then after, a narrative abstract, starting on page 6, there is a table that lists every contract reviewed with the dollar amount, agency names, description of the services, and what type of reporting is covered. Starting on page 9, in which the actual individual contract review starts, is where you'll see these example pages. For example,
Elena, can I pause you for 1 second just to say, for those of you who haven't been through the full packet, there is a 50-page contract reporting report in the packet, and it is available on our website now.
Yeah.
We didn't print it out because we know people are sensitive about this.
So yes, that is available. So this is an example page of the individual contract reviews. At the top, we have a name of the agency and a description of the services. We then have a table that states the department that handles the contract. We then have, if it was available in the reports provided to us, the number of participants served. For example, we have here for this Access Supports Living contract, which was kind of three contracts that filled into each other. There was a total of 2,007 served. And also it has the total of the contracted amount and the invoices paid as of April 4th, 2024 in our financial system. After the table is a narrative describing what services are under the contract and what reporting is required, as well as a surface level analysis of that reporting. The reason why it's only surface level is because most contracts do not have the reporting that allows for a deeper analysis. And at the bottom of the page, we'll see a screenshot of the portion of the reporting that was provided by the department. So some key takeaways that we had was that depending on the department, how a contract is handled greatly differs. Some departments are meeting with newer agencies on a monthly basis, while more seasoned agencies meet biannual departments. Specifically, the Department of Mental Health is very good at having regular meeting with its agencies. A lot of other departments aren't meeting with the agencies, and if they are meeting with the agencies, they are not. It's only with contractually obligated agencies. Department of Mental Health tends to go with any of their vendors. Some departments also review the reports differently. Some departments were not aware that reporting was required for specific contracts, while some had not collected the reporting months after the required deadline for that reporting. Most contracts also rely on the agency to create the reporting format, examples of which you'll see in the main body of the report in those screenshots. There's a very wide range of reporting that we get. The result of this inconsistent reporting resulted in duplicated reports for different months. So one report sent for February was also sent for March, and that was not caught by the department until we had sent the reports to us. Sections were not filled in the report at all for the entire year of reporting. And there were miscalculations of totals in the reporting as well. Additionally, many contracts do not have stated anticipated outcomes to compare to, and there's no standardization in outcomes and output reporting for similar service contracts, such as advocacy services and outreach services. So we have a few recommendations. The main thing is we really want to make sure we're getting that unique number in addition to any duplicated numbers of service for those individuals. That way we really know how the contract is interacting with constituents. Without that unique number, it's very hard to understand the scope of who is being served. For lower value contracts, a simple report matrix that is provided to the agency or in a meeting with the department to replace the narrative and long form reports. These long form reports take staff time away from services being performed, and especially with smaller agencies. The meeting could be a phone call, a virtual call, or in person. It doesn't have to be a big thing. For high value contracts, ensure meeting with the department is required at least twice per year, and anticipated outcomes are stated in the contract. We see that agencies that keep an ongoing relationship with the department are able to keep an open dialogue of successes, challenges, complaints, and concerns that help inform the department in future contracting for that service. For anticipated outcomes, it allows for an analysis on a per contract basis on the performance of the agency. We also wanted to suggest that for the Comptroller's office to issue the final payment associated with the contract, any reporting that is contractually obligated has to have been submitted. And our last kind of recommendation is we would love to form a working group It would be informal, maybe one or two interested legislators, to go through any information that you're really hoping to glean from reporting. I kind of wanted to show you guys a case study, just to kind of show you how the relationship with the department and who's handling the matrix of the reporting really shows you what kind of information it has. So we have two reporting here. One is handled by the Department of Mental Health that provides supported housing and community services to residents. This matrix is created by the department. On the other side, we have a matrix created by the agency, by Gateway of the Hudson Valley, for case management for home-delivered meals. This is a sister contract that feeds into a much larger contract for seniors being having meals delivered to them. And this matrix is created by the agency. The Office of the Aging does not create this matrix. So when we're looking at them, we have one that has very specific data points that have it broken down into quarter as well as an anticipated target. And the Excel spreadsheet actually colors to whether or not the number for that quarter meets the target. On the other side, it is de-identified, but there's only contact dates for when the agency reached out to individuals who were receiving meals delivered. No further information on how those interactions went or really any other information you would want to know.
Elaine, if I could just note, both these contracts are Gateway of the Hudson Valley.
So yes.
The way we're treating them depends on the department and the services, and it's completely different depending on the contract.
Yes. The matrix by the county allows us to have a deeper analysis and control what data is being collected. If the agency is making its own matrix, they're going to collect data that they think we want and not actually what you might need. So I just kind of wanted to show you guys that, to show you how to read the report, kind of understand the takeaways of the report, and then also kind of see a main case study from the report. I also wanted to provide you guys an update on a vendor dashboard. So for legislators that are not familiar, last fall we came to this committee and presented them a vendor dashboard. This is an online tool that would allow you to look at all payments and contracts to vendors. On the upper left-hand corner, we have what the front page would be. It would be a scrollable list of all vendors that state their number of contracts and total paid. It will be searchable. You could filter by the year, by the total amount paid. You would then select one of the names of the vendors, and that would bring you to the lower left-hand photo, which would be the main landing page for the vendor. It would show every payment per each contract, as well as non-contracted payments. You'd be able to search that, filter that by which department is the contracting department, and then also by the year. You would then be able to select on that contract number, and that contract number would then bring you to a full list of all contract payments and their descriptions. And as well as the contract document and ideally reporting associated, de-identified reporting associated with that contract. Now, there was an issue. We had a software delivery issue that delayed us by 5 months. We've been working very closely with IS, and we have another product that will work in replacement. And so we're starting to work and develop the dashboard in that other product. We are hoping to have a working product to you guys prior to your budget deliberations. Now, I also wanted to touch on site visits. So on site visits, the site visit that we've done, it turned into a total dog and pony show. For some reason, they associate us with the funder, even though the funder is the legislator. And we didn't actually see any constituents receiving services. The buildings were empty. And it was just the CEO kind of walking us around and showing us. So we felt that that's not the best way to really find out the information that you guys want. And so we've come up with another tool that could hopefully reach constituents directly. and that is the constituent survey. Now, the constituent survey, it will be web-based. It is QR-enabled. It covers safety at locations, concerns with services, staff interactions, and general feedback. We currently have a draft procedure, which has all survey submissions received regarding any executive department or any fee-for-service contract. Will be referred to the county executive's office within 3 business days. Any survey submissions received regarding services for another elected office will be referred to the office within 3 business days. And then all survey submissions would be aggregated on a monthly basis and submitted to the clerk of the legislature for distribution among the legislators. Ideally, we'd be placing a sticker at every place services are rendered to constituents, and also have paper copies available for individuals who would not be able to use the QR code. We can make it, yes. It's a Google Forms, so it can be easily printed.
We're happy to answer any questions. This is really the beginning of a conversation, and I know we've had, you know, conversations with the chair and others about ways to improve contract reporting, and we really felt it was imperative to sort of look across the breadth of contracts to give you an analysis of what we're currently doing.
Mr. Collins? Forgive my ignorance. Do we have in the contract house reporting selling, or is that done separately from the contract? So it's all within all the contracts.
It's not in all contracts. Some contracts do not require. So when we're talking about our main universe of contracts, there's different service types. So we have service that is for constituents, and there's contracts that are for building roads, building bridges. Our concern is with one constituent services, where individuals are receiving something from the county or receiving help from the county. Not all of those constituent contracts require reporting, flat out. The ones that we provided for you, the 55, all of those required reporting because we wanted to see what kind of reporting was being collected. And that type of reporting varies greatly depending on the department, depending on the agency, depending on the service that is being performed.
So does it make sense for us to have standardized reporting for constituent contracts? Or is not, doesn't that not work out? I'm not sure.
We want to work towards a recommendation kind of with, that's why we want to do the working group, hopefully have some department heads, because depending on the service contract, it might not work to have a similar rubric for every single one. Instead, if it's a specific outreach services have their own type of rubric, but the rubric used for outreach services is not the same rubric one would use for meals delivery. So that's the one thing that we would need to discuss in order to figure out what questions we would want to ask for those rubrics for those services.
Same one. That was my question. Sure.
So I want to first of all appreciate the fact that this seems like it's done with a lot of compassion and help towards nonprofits. I know both of us have long-term nonprofit background, and some nonprofits are just not set up for big reporting and getting all this together. So I think meeting nonprofits where they're at is really helpful, and I really hope that we can take this information and bake it into our own contract process in a way that really is identifying different types of nonprofits, different capabilities for different nonprofits, and making sure that we're not asking a nonprofit to do something that would just not ever happen. You know, so making those expectations real, I think, is really important. You talked about a high-value contract. What's your definition of a high-value contract?
So kind of like based off of the dollar amount we were going off of. So if it's probably over a $100,000 contract, you would want to have, and even that limit, we'd be open to pushing that up. But for really, we're looking at the lower, so anything that's like 30,000 and below, if there's a narrative and long form report required, it doesn't really make sense because that's taking time and money away from the services being rendered.
So it seems like this is really data based. Are you doing anything with anecdotal information?
Which
is also important in the nonprofit service world.
No, I mean, it's definitely important. I mean, I feel like we want to have those anecdotal narrative long form, just what information, what people are telling them as it's going on. But we just want to make sure that there's specific points that are being collected in addition. And also for the lower value contracts, just a phone call and kind of explaining what this issue is instead of having it written is probably the better way to go about getting that anecdotal information than having it.
And then my last point is this is actually really good for nonprofits because then they can use this data to go out and get more money, go to other grantors, and so I think it's a really helpful tool. Thank you for your work on it.
Yeah, I would like to follow on those comments. I agree. And I like the recommendations for smaller contracts having alternative reporting mechanisms. And the case study reveals that we also probably need to talk agency, department by department, because, you know, somebody who's a department head may not have had any background in survey data collection or reporting mechanisms. And so I would hope that the Comptroller's Office would, you know, serve to basically help bring the level up and you know, share best practices across these different departments. In terms of constituent surveys, I think that is one way to get some qualitative data, but I think including an open-ended question on every report, asking the vendors, the service providers, for their qualitative impression of their program is really good, and it could capture things that might get lost if we're just relying on the phone call. The constituent surveys will supplement that, but in my experience out in the western part of the county that I represent, we have had efforts to fill up surveys and voting online with repeated reports from, we believe, single individuals or groups of individuals. So it'd be good, I think, to try to develop some way, you know, I know you probably want to keep this so people can be anonymous if they want to be, but to try to identify maybe zip code or even something tighter than zip code, so that if you see hundreds of the same types of complaint coming in from one location, that it might be a flag that this is not a representative sampling of the community. We don't think that we saw that in the choice of the I voted sticker, but we did hear young people talking about doing it. So, you know, if you're sophisticated in your use of a computer, you can set it up so you can have an outsized weight in a conversation. And I'd like to try to build in ways that we might capture that if that's happening.
I love those suggestions. The survey that is in front of you, that's provided at the back of this packet, it's the paper form of the survey. We are very much open to changing, adding, taking things out based off of recommendations. We already were kind of discussing zip code, but we were wondering if it would be better to try to find a way to base it off of legislative area. But we didn't want to have to then ask people's addresses. So we've been debating how to do that. But now that you've said that that's absolutely something we want, then we'll work towards getting it done.
So one of my prior areas of training was in research design. And one of the ways you could do, especially with the paper copies, is simply allow page numbering on each of the paper copies you have, so that if somebody wants to copy it, they will copy like page 3. And if you see 20 page 3s come in, then you know. And numbers are cheap and go infinitely. So on paper, it's easy to do. Probably the IT folks could give you something similar on IP addresses that are anonymous if you don't track down the owner of that IP address.
Thank you.
I'd be happy to participate on the working group.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much.
Yes, I want to point out that no one knows the legislative district they live in.
Yes,
true.
Yeah. Valid point.
If I could just follow up also to say that we do plan to do continued site visits. It's pretty clear the comptroller calling and saying they want to come, that I want to come, is not the way to do it, but our plan is to send out staff, Elena with another staff member, to just drop in And if there are services being provided under a contract that any legislator wants to have a site visit made, please let us know. We're open to that.
If I could just add a little bit more, and thank you for your work. I think a lot of this is going to be really helpful for the future, the dashboard. I do appreciate the acknowledgement that it's not necessarily one size fits all. There's not going to be a standardized template necessarily across all departments and services. And also the point about going to the department heads, I think if anybody has a question about the contracts, like going through the report, it's important to go to the department heads because they have a lot of, and their staff has a lot of interaction with the nonprofits that are outside of this formal reporting process. So they do have a lot of information that just isn't provided, like, you know, in these reports. So, like, for example, one of them, I think it said there was no report until the end of the year. But I know that, like, for that particular contract, the department head talks to the vendor every day during the active season and is in touch and helping them, like, troubleshoot issues. And, you know, I just want to give everybody the context that there are cases that I know, like, in my, a lot of these are human services contracts where the department heads will come and say, we're not getting the service that we would want from this vendor and we'd like to reallocate the funding. So it's not just, I just don't want to leave anybody with the impression that the contracts are not actively managed, but I appreciate, you know, I appreciate this work and I do think it'll be helpful to follow up with the department heads.
Is there the ability, given separation of powers, for the executive office and the comptroller's office to work in tandem on this? So, for example, if a contract has been abandoned or canceled, is that something that's going to be easily captured by what's being done? And if not, will we be able to fix that?
We can think about that. We can definitely think about that. It depends on the process. Like if we have to reallocate the funding from one source to the other, oftentimes we come here and we talk about that. And there's another, you know, there's one today. So, but we can.
And Deputy County Executive Chaffaris, we're hoping that a member or two of the executive staff or department heads will join us in our group discussions. We found Commissioner McDonald's reports to be just so helpful on those contracts. Yes.
Sure. I think part of that too, collaboration can be asking the controller's office what they need for data analysis. It's part of the contract.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you. And you know, it's just sort of what I envisioned is that we would be able to start measuring things because it's saying it for years is something I was taught. It's if you can't measure it, you can't manage it. And without seeing these things, and I would just say to the execs team, as we get closer to the budget, I would like there to be some thought about having, and it came out of last meeting too, a contract management department for the county that really, because it seems like that's where we're sort of lacking here. Having universal approach to contracts. So I'll just think of that.
Thank you.
Cool.
Thank
you. All right, back to the agenda. All motions are to adopt unless otherwise stated. All right, should have said that at the beginning.
Point of order, Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
We're going to make a motion to adopt every resolution. Is that going to jam us up if somebody wants to postpone, like the prior committee meeting?
Yep. Accept that.
In response to that, could somebody who considers a resolution to be potentially problematic make a motion to discuss?
Of course. I said, unless otherwise stated, it's assumed to be.
So.
I have a flow, and if you mess up my flow, it's going to be a long night. So this is purely for
it is a long night.
Yeah, it's already a long night. All right, resolution number 77. Can I have a motion?
Make it.
Second.
Make a motion to postpone.
Legislator Maloney.
I just wanted to state it was this template, as I call it, for a future resolution, was discussed at the well, first kind of board meeting of the investment board. When this was first up, I asked that it be postponed month after month after month until it's aligned on and sent back in whatever form it's sent back. I was at the last meeting and heard there was a legislator had looked to vote it down, but just 30 days prior, I had explained my vision and everyone seemed to be in agreement. And now it's with this board being talked about and gone over. So at some point, we'll get their thoughts on it and then we'll have the real discussion and votes. But until then, pay no attention.
And it has been asked for them to review.
They actually started discussing it, I believe, right, Kevin?
It was brought up.
A motion to postpone 1 month. Second? Second. Discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
So carried. Resolution 157. Can I have a motion?
Motion.
Second?
Second.
Discussion? I have discussion. Peter, everyone, sorry. Can you opine on what this is, 157?
157?
Yeah.
Sure. 157 is the grants team was able to secure a grant through NYSERDA to fund a position related to climate justice. This is going to help with the climate core, along with some other climate justice activities that the executive's office has. Once you look at resolution 158, you'll also see some movement around the Climate Corps interns, which will actually result in a savings for the county.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carry. 158, can I have a motion?
Motion.
Second?
Second.
Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carry. 160, can I have a motion?
Motion.
Second?
Second.
Second. All in discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carry. Resolution 161, can I have a motion?
Motion.
Yes.
Second?
Second.
All in discussion?
Yes, Mr. Chair, this is $10 million from the grant we just accepted. I think it's a good thing that we're flying and getting $10 million worth of money to help worthy causes. But this money is going to the IPARC project. I have a few problems with what's going on over there now, mainly the fact that they're behind on their tax, school taxes to the tune of $540,000. I believe they asked for a deferment on their mortgage that they were supposed to pay in an annual mortgage for 5 years. I believe that's the terms. The school taxes and the town and county taxes is most troublesome. The children in the Kingston School District are not going to be taking a hit, of course, because the county is going to take it out of their own fund balance to pay that school taxes, which means that everybody in the county, if you add it up, is probably a 1% property tax increase, $540,000. I believe it's about $750 to raise the taxes 1%. I know that's not going to happen because we're going to take it out of contingency, but everybody is springing to pay these taxes right now that's not being paid. I've seen a letter of intent that Mr. Cotter sent the county. He brags about and almost uses as collateral references all his other projects throughout the Northeast and some Yonkers. IPARC, I-84 over there, the old Dutchess County site, a site down in Wilton, Connecticut, very rich town. Those projects I hear are doing pretty well, according to him. Why can't he take a couple of dollars from those projects and pay his school taxes like everybody else in the county? I think we should postpone this. I'm not going to make a motion to postpone. I want to hear some more debate. But I think we should postpone this until those taxes get paid off.
My understanding of this, and again, is that this money is coming from the states and being used to help fund IPARC 87 and help fund success of that. I am bothered by the same things that just been mentioned. My question is, does the school tax, does it get paid back with interest? Do we recover that tax if we pay for it and then they eventually pay the school tax? Do we get that money back in the county to mitigate what we paid? But this is $10 million, sorry, coming into the county to help a project which will help the county economically if and when it becomes successful. It's hard for me to say $10 million is state money.
Share and just reiterate that the project has taken a little longer to develop than was initially anticipated. However, things are moving forward at this point in time, and we have been assured verbally that they are paying the taxes this week. They did call today for the update number.
The IPARC project is coming along at the town of Ulster. I know the planning board just approved the lot line adjustment and phase one of the site plan. And this grant does require Cotter to put in, I think, up to $50 million over the next 18 months. So he's spending money. The main building is certainly coming along. I know that I think BOCES are looking at moving there. So this is a developer that, you know, we wish we had 25 years ago when IBM sold the property. So and he's a serious developer. He's, as Lester Roberts said, he has IPARC 84. He has properties in Connecticut. So I think it's a good thing for the county.
Chairman,
we were promised private sector jobs. The only talk I ever heard was a bit of a training hub for all these private sector jobs that were going to come in. We're not getting receipts for remediation. We're now finding out that we can pay for the remediation. It was a $12 million deal. $7 million was remediation. We were all under the impression that this was $7 million that Cotter Natural Resources was going to be putting in 2 years ago. Now we're finding out we're putting in the money, and we're not even getting receipts for what's actually being done. We're just taking their word. A lot of time, big developers like this actually own some of the companies maybe doing the remediation. We have a lot of questions on this remediation. Where are the receipts, and why haven't they handed them off? The $5 million they owe us for the property, not being paid. School taxes, not being paid. Vendors, not being paid. Are they going to pay the vendors along with the school tax that aren't being paid right now? Where are the private sector jobs? We were told 2 years ago it was going to be $200 million that Cotter and Natural Resources were going to be put in. Now all I see is tax dollars, and I see existing government jobs moving over with our fingers crossed that someday we actually get a private sector job over there. We have 701 Grand Avenue sitting there, a building in better shape. If we really need to move these departments, if they need a new home, if the state doesn't want to rent from us anymore, we want to move that over there. If BOCES really needs another location, this isn't even the best location. We're going to sink a ton of money into it. And the middleman, we have a middleman here, and this is nothing but government. Nothing but government. We were promised private sector jobs, and they're apparently out of money. And now we're just going to give them more state money. Ulster County is part of New York State. Our residents pay school taxes. There is no money tree in Albany. The idea that we look the other way on all these concerns because it's a state grant doesn't fly with me. So I'm just wondering, by the way, the people that brought us this deal, Pat Ryan, Tim Wiederman, Bert Goldnick, these are the people that brought us this deal. And a consultant that now works for Cotter who worked for Ginsburg. These are the people that are responsible for this deal. The same people that brought us Elizabeth Street, the Paradise Lane purchase price, the triple net lease over at the Freeman Building, the non-taxes being paid at for Ginsburg for all those years, the non-taxes being paid over at 71 Grand Avenue. I can go on and on and on. These are the individuals that brought us this deal that we just want to keep our blinders on and keep hoping for the best. This was about getting this place back on the tax rolls, bringing in real jobs. None of that seems to be happening, and we just seem to be putting more and more tax dollars into this location with what essentially becomes a middleman. We could do this ourselves for half the price. We should have used ARPA funds. A lot of those buildings probably needed to come down. This is never going to be the economic lifeblood that we need and want it to be going down this road. And the longer we go down this road, this is an extension of the Ginsburg deal as far as I can see. And the longer we go down, they got no skin in the game. They don't want to put any skin in the game. Now they've removed liens. There is no way. We don't have a lot of recourse. We don't have a lot of leverage. And at any point, natural resources can get up and take off. And they're not losing a dime because they got no skin in the game. And from what I hear, they threaten that all the time. We got to get them more and more money or they're leaving. So let's just keep approving and hoping for the best. It's worked out with all these other projects.
I'd like to have the entire list of all the things that people have done over the past 3, 5, 10 years. And let's all look at it and see which ones we want to tear down and which ones we think did some good. Because we can read a list of all the ones we hate, and it, you know, that, I don't know, serves a purpose. I think we need to look overall. And this site is one that we've inherited because of what happened with IBM. And yes, it's complicated, and yes, it's messy, but this is a site that is now on the road, I think, to doing some good. And we have, you know, you could say state money is not something we should take, but we already paid the taxes, and if we're not receiving that money back here, some other community will receive that. So I would rather that it come in and help us with this project. I think that the project is potentially very good. And if we want to tighten up oversight on certain aspects, then let's bring those aspects forward. But turning down $10 million, this isn't part of the how I think we do better at that site.
I don't think anybody here is, maybe with the exception of my colleague, Legislator Maloney, is saying we turned down the $10 million. What we are saying is that we need to hold these people accountable and make sure they get the job done, make sure they pay their mortgage on time, make sure they pay their taxes, make sure they pay their vendors. It's not a hard request.
How is that done? And why did it take my questions in economic development the other day for any of us to even know half of these things? Why doesn't the EDA report to us? Why don't the two legislators that are always on the EDA report this? Did they know? Did they know they weren't paying their school taxes? Somebody had to know. And we're never told. We're never told anything.
Is that a question, right?
It could be. It's rhetorical, but I'd love to get your opinion, Kevin.
We're always playing catch up with this county executive's office. They knew the school taxes weren't paid. They knew there was a deferment. They should have told us. We need to hear the good and the bad, not just the press release every day that comes out, you know, how wonderful things are. We need to hear about, you know, these things, just like we need to hear about a mental health clinic and not read it in the newspaper. We're always playing catch up, and that's not good.
I would just like to say that all of these things are reported at the receipt of meeting. I was the one who checked on the taxes because I was interested, after I received the request for the deferment, exactly what the stress was on the organization, because I think that's part of the bigger picture in which they're coming to us and saying that they need to unlock their bank financing in order to, you know, get leases in, unlock the bank financing, further redevelop the site. The site needs somewhere between $40 and $60 million of redevelopment. And the decay of all the infrastructure, all the buildings there is profound. And it, frankly, I think it's more than they had realized when they came and came onto the site. But I was the one who looked that up. And when I figured it out, I reported it to the board within a couple of days at a public meeting.
Which board?
To the UCEDA board.
And we appreciate that, but you know, most of the legislators here, we can't be everywhere at every time, you know. So
UCEDA owns the property.
That's correct.
And my comment is that it was also reported to us at Public Works in our committee. So I think when we're getting that information shared through the appropriate channels and we pay attention to it, that's good. And somebody else finds it out later through a separate means and thinks that they've got, you know, some gotcha moment. It may not be that.
Just
that morning.
Everybody was aware. We had no receipts. Everybody was aware they didn't pay us the $5 million. Everybody was aware they weren't paying their school taxes. Everybody's aware they're not paying their vendors right now, right? Yep, everybody was aware. Is it in the UCEDA minutes, and are they online available for me to look up right now?
There's all the UCEDA board packets, and the minutes are online.
Because I attempted to, and I couldn't find it. And I would just like to remind everybody, we are UCEDA. It's a public beneficiary corporation that is the county. And if we're going to treat it like some separate entity, which is how it's treated, which is very dangerous and not what it was meant to be.
Call a question.
Those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
That'll be a statement now.
CARES 1 and 2, I forgot that one. Resolution 163, can I have a motion?
Move.
Second?
Second.
Second. There, discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carry. 164. Can I have a motion?
Move.
Second. Discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carry. 165. Can I have a motion?
Motion.
Second. Discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So carry. 166. Can I have a motion?
I move it.
Second. Discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. 167. Can I have a motion?
Move it.
Second. Second.
I'll second for the purpose of discussion.
Well, he's got to withdraw his motion was to adopt, so okay. He'd have to withdraw it if you want to do just a discussion.
I'll
Draw
the motion.
Okay. Good. Motion to discuss.
Motion to discuss.
Second. Senator Nolan.
Second.
Second. Discussion. Senator Nolan.
I don't think that we have to do this in order to do this, and so I just prefer not to pass resolutions that tie us into things that we can do at a time when we have more data in front of us. So, It's not that I oppose the general thrust, but that to me the mechanism is more restricting than I like.
Senator Maloney?
Yeah, we're moving fast through everything.
Trying not to take too much time or hang on, but talking to the one community resident that was at the UCEDA meeting, it was the comptroller that brought up the taxes. So I'm really sick of getting different information inside these meetings, like the liability. This was discussed at economic development. Seemed like there was one. I discussed it with other legislators after the meeting. Seemed like there was one legislator that was really for this. Everyone else had concerns, and then all of a sudden there was a unanimous yes vote after some silence. I think even the chair was surprised there wasn't discussion for a postponement. We're basically mandating ourselves do something we could do at any time, earmarking something that puts us on a clock. It doesn't alleviate the extra funds that we have in fund balance that we keep getting cited for. I don't know. Sounds good though, and it'll turn into a great press release, even though it means nothing.
Yeah, this is an assignment. It's not a restricted fund, and so it can be changed at any time. So if we found at some point that it wasn't working the way we thought it would be working, or if we found that we were in some sort of crisis where we needed to change it, we could very easily just reassign the funds. It's not restricted.
Fair comment.
I believe that we are already in a crisis with housing. I believe this directs money to housing in a way that will help us track that money and use that money for housing. I don't see, as Legislator Richard Quijol said, if we end up with too much money for housing, that would be a great thing, and we can move it out. I don't think we'll ever have too much money for housing. So I don't see the issue with allocating money for housing and keeping it in housing until we find ways to use it and actually have affordable housing for this community, for the residents who cannot afford to live here and don't want to live here.
So when we, established the housing, housing action fund, one of the criticisms when those of us who were supporters of that type of initiative from the beginning, one of the criticisms that we would get is that there's no automatic mechanism for funding it over time, that it was just a one-time allocation. And so now we're asking for that allocation over time, that sustainable funding source. This is a sustainable funding source it's important for, you know, that fund is intended for, you know, capital investments that take a long time to see through to fruition. There's a transparent process. We've never had a transparent process like that before for, you know, investing in these types of projects, and having a, you know, being able to anticipate the funds that are going to be available is important for planning. And it's one of the things that we know, because we've heard it from the community over and over and over again, and from legislators who were critical of establishing the fund with a one-time investment, that it needs to have an ongoing mechanism for funding. And this is that. And so, you know, I would encourage you to advance this.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't think there's any other, I could be wrong, I don't think there's any other line item in the budget that's funded with, you know, mandatory receipts from a tax. I think this body, again, should have been more part of the process, coming up with a, you know, random 25% each. We were also told that some of this money was going to go toward tourism. I don't see that in here. You know, I guess we do have to fund housing. There's plenty of millionaire developers that are going to be running out of money soon, you know, to make affordable housing projects like Penrose, where it's running about $80 million for 164 units. That doesn't sound really affordable to me. It comes out to about $450,000 per unit. So I think this should be either voted down or postponed so this body could decide what the ratio is.
Mr. Collins.
My understanding is a part of this revenue is already devoted to tourism. Is that correct?
So I can answer that. So I, you know, it was never the intention to remove money from tourism, right? There's no intention on anyone's part, I don't think, I know I'm not on the county executive part, not on my part, and anyone else that's supported housing, that we, like, stop funding tourism contracts or cut their contracts or stop their spending or something like that. But there is a question of how that was allocated in the past. And it was in our prior occupancy tax law that we said you put that a certain allocation equivalent to a certain amount should be spent on tourism, and the amount that we've spent on tourism year after year after year has always exceeded that. So that has always been fulfilled. That isn't changing here. But that wasn't ever in this type of legislation. That was in the old occupancy tax legislation. It wasn't included in the legislation that was introduced over a year ago here. And so that's, you know, there's no, like, removing money from tourism, but that mechanism was in a resolution that's been replaced by our current occupancy tax law.
That's been one.
Yeah, that's a good explanation. It was in the resolution we sent off to the state. It used to actually have it in there where we almost mandated ourselves to spend 10% of the bed tax or whatever on tourism, and it was like with the state. Didn't have to be done that way. We removed it, and then we went even beyond that, said, why would we ever earmark, that was a discussion we had 2 years ago, why would we ever earmark anything? Well, we're already spending this much on tourism, and if we ever don't want to spend this much or we want to spend more and we have the money, we'll do it, and we'll do it by resolution, which is kind of the same theory some of us are saying about this here. Can I have some example, question through the chair to Jeff Collins, can you give us a couple of examples of the kind of projects we will be funding with this money? Because I think that's the part of the conversation that we really haven't had. Earmarking it, putting ourselves on a psychological clock is one thing, but what are we going after? Jeff, yeah. Legislator Collins has been the one that's, I've heard in multiple meetings now, that's most pro this approach. Can I just ask for some examples of how this money is going to be used? Why, I mean, with tourism, we know exactly what we do with tourism. We're going to earmark money for tourism. We get presentation after presentation every year. We have a tourism department that's been up and running for years. We know exactly what it means to put another $1 million into our tourism budget. They would actually come and present exactly what they're going to do with it, the people they're going to contract with. They already have ideas on it. I think it's a very reasonable question to ask, what kinds of things are we going to do with this money? Going to get started right away, I assume.
You don't have to answer it. And I think you made your own argument for yourself, was that we put the money into the budget line and then they have to come and get approval. This is the same thing. Essentially, if this were to go through, this would be the same thing. sort of aside, so to speak, but they still have to get approval from trust to expend the money for whatever project it might be. So
you don't think it's a good idea to talk about what we're going to do with these tens of millions of dollars over the next couple of years, the types of things we're going to do? All right, no, that's fine.
I'm going to go first because everybody else is trying to write. I don't support this. I think Legislator Nolan said it quite well in the beginning of we're doing something that gives us permission to do something we already can do now. Setting it aside, I have concern, especially coming up on the heels of the finishing, hopefully soon. May is coming right up in another month from now. The salary study, and I think we're going to see a bill come due that a lot of us are going to be very surprised by. I just can't, you know, Chair Criswell said that, you know, we can just always take it back. Easier said than done While technically we could just move the money around anytime we want, it's difficult once you say you're going to fund something and then all of a sudden, I guess the example of tourism. It was a little bit upsetting that, you know, we were going to take money away. Well, no, we're not, but that's what the optics will be. And I just think it's better that, you know, we have the ability to devote money when real projects come before us. I certainly agree we should be spending money on housing and make sure we have affordable housing, but to set just an arbitrary number aside for what I don't know, to Legislator Maloney's point,
nor do we want to.
I just don't see the value. Legislator, you should tell.
Sure. So as the sponsor, I could probably answer. As the sponsor of all the housing legislation, I could probably answer the question that was asked, which is, you know, that I already mentioned in my prior comments, there's a transparent process for approving capital investment in housing. We worked so hard last year to set that up. It needs a sustainable funding mechanism. This is that. We saw the improvements that we were able to make with UCAP when we were able to do what we can do under the just under our ability to make the you know, fare to decrease the cost of the fare. We saw ridership increase. If we were able to actually invest real money in our transportation system, we could have a real impact. So those are real things that the county executive can bring to us, just like the tourism contract that they bring to us right now, that we can advance. So it's the same kind of a thing. I will say that you know, the tourism spending is important, and I don't think that if this passed as written, I don't think anyone is suggesting that they would pull money from tourism because of this. That's just absolutely not accurate. However, if folks feel strongly that we should have that funding mechanism the way that we used to have for tourism, I would support that. And, you know, especially if y'all are, you know, wanting for that and considering voting this down, I would welcome a postponement and we can work on that and get the tourism spending in there so that we all feel good about this and our tourism department, you know, and our, more importantly, our tourism community feels supported, because we don't want them to feel like the money's being pulled from them, which is absolutely not the case. But I'm happy to work on this legislation to make sure that it's reflective of our intention.
Let's say Hanson has spoken, so I'm going to go to her next.
May I ask a question to the executive's office? I know that we've discussed the tourism. Can you elaborate on that a little bit, the amounts?
So I can give you the exact amounts. Ken can probably do that. But we do fund tourism pretty regularly. We do increase our funding for tourism as a company with projects or contracts that are meeting tourism. As Legislator Isherson said, we had that language in the original law.
Right.
And then we pulled that language from the original law. We would absolutely support if there is a dedication to tourism to support that. Ken can probably pull your numbers right now.
Follow up with just, has it increased or decreased from over the last couple of years?
Generally, it increases in a small amount. And when I look back at the history, I can go back to 2008. I have to go back to the books in the closet to pull 91. But when I look at 2008, I can tell you that about a third of the revenue, if not more, came from the dedication for that. Now in 2024, we're looking at an amended budget, of $1.8 million for tourism. So 10% of what we're currently collecting is going to get you, you know, less than a third of that, considering what we were. And when we're at 2%, it would have been even less. It'd probably be closer to 15% or so. So it's gone down, the share has gone down significantly from what it used to be when the local law was adopted in 1991.
But that's not because we spent less, it's because we're generating so much more bed tax.
Actually, Anthony, you're good.
Thank you.
Okay. That's fair enough.
Yeah, I am reminded through some of these comments that once this money is set aside, it doesn't have to be spent on any particular time frame. And so I'm going to contradict myself and say that if we go in the direction of restoring that funding on tourism, which I think is essential since tourism is our leading economic driver in this county, that it also makes sense to create this type of funding mechanism for our housing and transportation initiatives. And I just think of all the work we've done on housing over the past few years as being what we would fund with this. So the idea that I need to be provided with a list of that is just doesn't make any sense to me. So I support this as it's being proposed.
Sure. Well,
I think that for me, the having a consistent source of funds is important for an infrastructure project. You know, building housing is not a one-year thing. We allocate money for it. The thing that we need to plan out, and sometimes it might take us 3 or 4 or 5 years to accumulate the money we need for a large project. Having that money, knowing that that money is going to be there year after year after year, it's going to help us plan for long-term housing things. It's not a short-term project. It's a long-term project. So long-term projects need long-term money sources, and this is what this is trying to do. And I'm totally fine with, you know, postponing this, amending it, adding tourism to this. I think that would be great to do that. The numbers that I get in my head, roughly $6 million from this particular tax. We devote a quarter to tourism, a quarter to housing, and a quarter to transportation. That's $1.5 million each. That can make a huge difference to all of those three things. So I'd be happy to make a motion for those phones to get a chance to amend it in the future.
Yeah, I wanted to actually ask the sponsor if we could amend this right now to restore the 10% from the original, so that the allocation then would be 25, 25, 10, and then 40 going to fund balance.
I would accept that. Yeah, that would be friendly to me.
Say it again.
So it would be the 10% would be restored to tourism from the original occupancy tax law that we had, and it would be 25 to housing, 25 to transportation. So it would be housing, transportation, and tourism, 25, 25, 10. 40 general fund.
So that's an actual
amendment.
Motion.
Yes, it is.
Discussion.
On the amendment, please don't. We're just going to keep earmarking. What other problems do we have? Air quality, the environment. Let's do another 25% for the environment. We'll fix the environment while we're at it. We're spending what we want to spend on tourism. The whole idea, the original argument that many of us made was, let's not earmark, let's do what we do year to year, what we can afford and what we think is right. And now I hear the opposite. I would have never even argued for it. Just pass it the other way if we're going to just keep adding other amendments to this. And the idea, by the way, everybody, hate to burst everyone's bubble, but there's not many people in this room in the private sector. But the idea that the money we spend in tourism has anything to do with a single person that comes to this county is silliness. And every single person in the private sector in this county knows it. The problem is I come up here to the sixth floor into this bubble of government money. Money trees in Albany, just unbelievable. We don't want to talk specifically about what the money's even going to do. That's a silly question. You're just approved millions of dollars. We'll figure it out. No, don't tell them what you're going to do with the money.
We did.
We'll figure that out later. You absolutely did not. You just say assisted dwelling. Say something to me. All right.
All right.
Lottery.
More discussion on. You hit your hand up with Shisha, but it was.
Yeah.
I'll just say I'll encourage us not to vote for this amendment tonight and postpone and actually have it. It should go back to.
That would make me most comfortable.
Yeah.
Honestly.
Doing this on the fly. I mean.
Natalie, the motion is postponed.
We got a motion on the table.
Was that seconded? My second, okay, to the
Motion to amend.
Sponsors.
Yeah.
Well, I think I did withdraw the amendment.
Okay, thank you. So motion was formed. Can we refer, which committee is this actually out of first?
It's Laws and Rules.
Health, Human Services.
Economic Development.
Yeah.
Which I think is appropriate.
Oh,
yeah. So so you can motion postpone and to refer.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, that's the right thing.
Yeah.
I second that one, just to refer.
And who we want it back here to?
It is still.
It okay?
Yeah, because you haven't passed it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good point. Yeah. Second.
Can we do these two in one?
We're good.
Just, it's only one. It's not
right.
Referral.
All those in favor of referring it to Economic Development?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Thank you. 169. Can I have a motion?
Sure.
Second.
Yeah, second.
Gotcha. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carry.
Opposed. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Wrong amendment. I apologize. I'm four. Thank you.
Yeah, I do now. Resolution 170. Can I have a motion?
Motion.
Second. Question? Did I get the answer on seeing answer come back on?
Yeah.
Still looking. Okay. All right. I had sent a comment because we approved in the budget for July to have a radio technician in the OEM department. I was just questioning what the status of it was. Are we still on target to have that position? The idea that we are going to have the position, I will start voting yes on my Comco contract. So, all right. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. 171, can I have a motion?
Motion.
Second?
Second.
Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So carried. 173, can I have a motion?
Make it.
Second?
Second.
Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Carried. Resolution 174, can I have a motion?
Motion.
Second?
Second.
Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. 175, can I have a motion?
Second.
Mr. Hanson? Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. 176, can I have a motion?
Motion.
Second. Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. 177, can I have a motion?
Motion.
Second.
Second.
Discussion? All those in favor?
Can I get can I get an explanation from the
177?
From the executive's office.
The ARPA administration asked me to cross for U.S. Treasury reporting.
So this is to fund the positions in the ARPA division to finalize and finish out all the ARPA contracts. So as you know, we haven't through, Nate, congrats on getting in, so we haven't through 2026 to finish and finalize all the contracts. There's a lot of data submission, a lot of reports that have to get finalized to the federal government for the ARPA project overall.
I'll just go with this. If we take the rate at which these applications and the filings were done up to this point over the last couple of years, we may want to fund these positions out to like 2040 or so. I don't know if we'll have enough money to do that, but let's just go ahead and approve this. Keep this ARPA nonsense going.
Sir Robert Schrader, good.
I'm good.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Bigger. All right. Resolution 178, can I have a motion?
Motion.
Second?
Second, I'd like to ask a question. Commissioner, can you just explain this one a little bit? Is this right?
Yeah.
Yes, please.
Actually, do you mind if I defer to Joanna? Because I know
sure.
that you have
this
the
425.
This is for the rescind, you have the policy.
Correct. Yeah. 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 Sure.
I read it, but.
You read it.
Yes, very good.
So originally there was a policy passed by the legislature. Chair Criswell was a co-sponsor for us to create respite houses in Ulster County. We have taken a number of steps over the years to try to implement that resolution, including looking at properties, putting out an SOQ for an operator, which we actually ended up publishing the recordings to a nonprofit, and looking at their various versions of their budget proposal. Several months ago, one of their recent budget proposals made it clear that this policy would most likely require ongoing funding contributions, which was not contemplated as part of the original policy that was passed. At the same time, the model that it was based off of, which is a house in Malden, New York, has been underutilized. It's available to elderly residents, and it's also expanding at the same time. So given the combination of those two things and a deadline for spending ARPA money, we thought it was important to start having the conversation about potentially reallocating the funding towards use that we feel very optimistic we can achieve within the timeline that we need, and towards services that the department has brought to us as being very urgent, namely mental health clinical support for children.
Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah, I just want to add, so this was legislation that I co-sponsored, and it was dear to my heart, and I'm sad to see it go, but I heard many really well thought out arguments about why this is not the best use of this money right now, and I'm in agreement with it. A couple of things I just want to add to your statement also is that with the creation of the Crisis Stabilization Center, that's going to have a great impact on serving this community that we don't even know what that's going to actually be. So do we actually need a respite house or not need a respite house? The other piece of the puzzle is with the reinstatement of inpatient mental health beds, that's also going to be a resource that wasn't even considered when we were putting this respite house resolution together. And I want to thank the team. I put a hard charge on you all and said, we want to keep the same intent for this money. And they came up with, I think, a very, very elegant solution to having the same intent, but serving a broader clientele. And I really feel like the work that we're going to do with youth is really where it's at with mental health, capturing the young folks at an early age and putting them in the right direction is going to help us as a community as a whole for years and years to come. So thank you very much for your work on that.
Just real quick, generally, the Crisis Stabilization Center is, so what will be, is it like a short-term respite, like what, like a couple days? No, I'm just curious. I don't know exactly how that works.
Sure. So the Crisis Stabilization Center is a co-licensed by OMH and OASIS, and they're going to be able to provide crisis-oriented assessment and like planning in order to be able to address whatever crisis is bringing you to the center. So if it's mental health and you don't necessarily meet the criteria for inpatient and you don't even need the emergency room, they can connect you to a therapist. They can connect you to, ongoing medication management, you know, a full wraparound services, a case management is what you need. A peer is what I'm doing. If you went to the Crisis Stabilization Center and you really connected with a peer that was there and you said, I think that this connects with me, then you don't need to go to the center for that. They can make a linkage for you to have a peer in the community. On the OASIS side, for the substance use disorder pieces, they have the ability to help someone who may be coming in seeking recovery, but of course we don't have inpatient detox beds here. They can help to start them, keep comfortable while they are, the center staff is trying to find a place for them to go for inpatient. So it's not, you have the ability to stay there 23 hours and 59 minutes.
Okay.
And we're very intentional in terms of setting up the environment so that you can not necessarily feel like you have to be rushed. So there's rocking chairs and loungers and really wanting folks to be able to feel comfortable enough to engage in whatever service they need.
Thank you.
Any other discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So carried. 179, can I have a motion?
Motion.
Second?
Second.
Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So carried. 180, can I have a motion?
Motion.
Second. Discussion? Samantha?
I just wanted to bring up about I know that there's a need in Kingston, and I know that there's a need in Ellenville for these centers, but I would ask that we don't forget the other parts of our county. When the talk came about Crisis Stabilization Center, I supported it in here in Kingston. I think it is a good location for it. But I said, moving forward, we need to look at other places in the county. So once again, there will be more services, and I understand it's because we own buildings here, but you know, perhaps moving forward, or part of this funding can be an annex or a bi-monthly services for children at our southern end of the county, or wherever anybody else wants to advocate for, because it's a long trip for a family that has a child that, you know, needs mental health services perhaps. So I would just like to put that out there, and that we need to advocate for down there also.
If I could speak to that, and I agree, you spoke to the reasons why we chose to you know, try the Kingston and the Ellenville, because we do have the ability to move very quickly in terms of when we find a provider and then get the service up and running, because we own the buildings. Site selection can be quite difficult for clinics, and then licensing the space also is a long-term process, and with the short turnaround for needing to be able to get these funds and contract, it felt like it was the easiest lift in making sure that the services hit the ground as soon as possible. I believe, I'm sorry, I don't have one of the agendas, but I believe that you passed the ability to do a behavioral health needs assessment, and that is going to further drive for us where the gaps are and what is needed. Perhaps in the southern end, it's not a full clinic, it could be a satellite. One social worker, half-time nurse practitioner, and we're hoping that they'll give us that data to be able to set us up in that way.
Okay. And one other question. Yeah. Can you just tell me quickly the Crisis Stabilization Center, that building,
mm-hmm.
floor by floor? Who's on what floor?
Sure. I know you've been here and sitting. Let's hear your voice.
Live, Julie. Breathe, and do it 368 all day.
Could you introduce yourself for people who don't know you?
Yeah, sure. If I haven't met you yet, my name is Jolene. I work for the Ulster County Department of Mental Health. I'm the Special Projects Director. One of the main projects that I've been hired to oversee is the implementation of the Stabilization Center, and then different projects throughout 368 as we're expanding. So on 368, you're going to have the Crisis Stabilization Center, which Tara has said is going to serve youth and adults. They will be in separate parts of the facility. That's part of the licensure. On the second floor, you have Samadhi, who provides outpatient services and groups and therapy. And then across the hall, you have Access, who also serves youth and adults. The third floor, we have a suite that we have chosen, and we did get feedback from community providers that already serve children on what it would look like for them to get licensed easily, but also keep the space safe and accessible to families. So we have a suite picked out that we have an idea of what we're going to use. And then the fourth floor is obviously the Ulster County Department. Those are all currently
My concern is, and I don't know what it's going to look like and what the services exactly Samadhi will provide there,
mm-hmm.
but having Samadhi and youth on the same floor and having Samadhi and the children's services above them in the same building is a concern of mine.
If I could speak to that, so as Jolene mentioned, that's currently the setup. Samadhi is providing Article 822 outpatient services there. So they're doing individuals, they have KSACs, they have clinicians, they have a medical director. That's what they're doing on one side. And then there's Access Supports for Living that has an urgent care. Children are walking through there all day. They're also being enrolled in their Article 31. To this point, and I'm hoping that I'm not jinxing anything, we have had no issue. And the two entities actually have a formal agreement with one another, and that if the Access Supports for Living has an individual who appears to have primarily issues with substance use disorder, they would refer to Samadhi, and Samadhi does the same for someone who needs to get their mental health under control in order to be able to engage successfully with SUD treatment. So they're working together.
One more question.
Yeah.
Would Samadhi, to your knowledge, be doing any type of harm reduction in this building?
It's possible, and it's also in the licensing for the Crisis Stabilization Center that they have to. Mm-hmm. That is a part of what the charge is for the Stabilization Center. They can do medication-assisted treatment. Actually, they have to offer some level of medication-assisted treatment, and in that, they're going to be doing harm reduction services.
I just want to mention that in the Health and Human Services Committee, I asked the same question to make sure we can distribute these services throughout the county instead of centralizing them in the two, you know, Ellendale and Kingston, because we do get really heavy centralization of services in Kingston and Ellendale, and we have a large county, and that has been brought up, and I appreciate the comments that you have.
You know, just comment that we've talked about this for other purposes, but within the county, just because we don't own it doesn't mean we don't necessarily have access to it. There's other, you know, towns, village halls, school districts, others that have, that I'm sure we can work out an arrangement with to utilize those spaces, so we don't always have to own something to use it.
Yes.
All right, all those in favor?
Can I make a comment? Yeah. I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, drag out the meeting a little bit longer. This seems like a big undertaking to have us vote on, talk about, discuss in 15 minutes. How long was this in the works for? How long were you planning this mental, for children's mental health crisis center?
The stabilization center?
No, I know, but the children's division.
The clinic?
Yeah, the clinic, I'm sorry.
A few months.
Where's the one in Ellendale located at, where we don't have a... We don't have a location yet.
We are looking at Trudy Farber building. Again, because we own it, but that's an easy option for us because we own it. We can get other places.
Is it possible to do more than one, like now, instead of just committing to Ellendale, like my colleagues on the other side of the table said? I mean, it's a big county. We can't even get a sidewalk down in Plattick Hill, and, you know, but we get a landfill. But, you know, it's a big county. We get nothing down there. I mean, we have to go to Newburgh or Poughkeepsie to get services, and that's not fair. We pay the same taxes as everybody else in this county.
We can explore that. I mean, part of the reason that we part of what we've been working on the past few months is figuring out the viability of this, mm-hmm. so that we can, if you approve, get it off the ground quickly and get the money spent so we know. Pretty sure Trudy Farber will work. We can explore other locations.
The other piece of this is that we're also going to need to search for a provider through the RFP mm-hmm. process. If the provider themselves may have access to mm-hmm. a location that would be in the southern tier, we would have the ability to be able to explore that as well.
Say a student is in crisis now, what do they do?
They can call the mobile mental health team. They can call the mobile mental health team. Of course, the urgent care is already in Kingston.
And
I know in our districts by us, they go to Dutchess County.
Yeah.
Because it's closer.
Yeah. Right.
So there are services now.
We have clinic services now, but we also have access issues. So it takes around 4 to 6 weeks before someone from intake is getting enrolled into a clinic. Child psychiatry is very difficult to staff, and that expertise, some of our providers currently don't have anything to offer. The hope is that we can increase access.
One other stat that Jolene shared recently is that the number of referrals to the children's single point of access mm-hmm. has gone up by 48%.
It was 48% over the past.
Issue that has been an issue, but it is.
So the school systems don't provide any of these services at all?
The school social workers are more trying to keep the students to be able to learn in that environment. It's not necessarily helping them in their community home environment. A lot of times it's connected, but their concern is that the student is in the class and is having their amount of seat time, and they're able to pass their tests, that sort of thing. So they're spending a lot of their time in the school building.
Thank you all.
What we do provide through ARPA funding, right, for mental health for middle school age,
mm-hmm.
and I think that's continuing.
It was one of the reasons why this is moving forward, because that pilot program, as you guys suggested.
Last question. When these children come to this this clinic or whatever we're calling it, will they be billed through their medical insurance?
Yes.
Thank you for all those answers.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Mr. Chair, I'm going to be a statement no as to the reasons I brought forward before.
Okay. Resolution 181, can I have a motion?
Motion.
Second. Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Carried.
Resolution 182, can I have a motion?
Motion.
Second. Discussion? Now this is the one I have discussion on. So 182, I'm sorry.
Okay.
So this is the LaSalle contract extension. So previously this was funded mostly by ARPA and then 77 by ARPA, 23 by the state, so we didn't pay anything. This sort of extension is now county funds. I asked for the performance data on it, and I have to be honest, it's not very impressive. This, again, goes back to what the controls office presented at the beginning is, you know, having actual data to show where's our money going and what are we getting in return for it. And they haven't hit their targets. Things are better this first Q1 of this year as compared to entire of last year. So at least it's going in the right direction, but it's just not a lot. There's number of referrals received by school/team, and then there's targets set here. Number of youth admitted per school. Like for example, last year was supposed to be a target of 10. They never hit 10. Percentage of youth whose parents, caregivers are directly involved in the program services, target was 95%, it didn't hit it. But I will say, like this year, so that one is at 95% and it's exceeded it now. So some of these things are getting better. I just, the numbers also are low, you know, I don't know, I guess, yeah.
A lot of this is not in the control of the facility. There is a pre-screening process by which referrals are made with an eye to what that facility that can offer. And so they may end up with 6 very difficult cases in 1 year and 8 very easy cases in another year. And so, especially with small numbers, which all of these institutions have, we have more than 20, I think, across the county, it can be very difficult to look at a line like that and really draw firm conclusions. I think you would need to have a level of analysis that would go further. So one you cited about parental involvement, family involvement, that one I think would be one that they, is more under their control. And so if that were far off, that would be a warning flag. But you'd have to look at things like that of what their actual success is with the group that they have. And just like grading teachers on how well they do with students, it's partly dependent upon the teacher, but also students come in at very different levels. And it can be hard to get everybody up to, you know, passing for their grade level if they came in several grades below that.
So I'm glad that you're able to see the changes in this quarter. Last year was a ramping up time as well. Staffing was difficult in order to be able to stabilize. I believe we're stabilized at this time as well. Because it was a ramping up of last year, we were also trying to engage the schools, which you would think would be easier than it was, but it actually wasn't. So getting the referrals flowing was also a ramping up period. We had to do a little redesign on the fly as well. The original model had them doing work in the school, getting space in the school in order to be able to support the student there. I mean, the school is the one that's making the referral no matter what, if we're supporting the kid, the child in the community. It is their performance or somehow their behavior in the school that is rising to the top that says that they need some assistance. So the model had it so that we could spend time in the school, but none of the schools, unfortunately, were able to give us a consistent space. So we did
or redesign and put more of our time in the community. That also took a little bit of time to get going, and I think with all of those tweaks, we're now finding our stride. The department does utilization review with them, with the program every month. And with every month, I am, you know, the data does show a part of it, but as the comptroller spoke about, the ability to have that anecdotal information, this program is hitting kids that it was intended to hit. It would be youth that would necessarily not come to the attention of the Department of Mental Health because they don't have a proper diagnosis, they haven't been assessed before, they don't have Medicaid. Because you don't need anything. It's a very low bar, low barrier in order to be connected to this service. And because of that, too, we also don't know where the youth is starting from. The assessment is really coming from the bottom line. So, I think we're hitting our stride, but no matter what, we are meeting our intention for this program, and that is to catch kids before they come to our level. I'd like to never see a full application for them because we give them the natural supports in the community.
I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, this is a resolution I was spoken to by Legislator Clinton in Health and Human Services. She is a middle school principal, and she really appreciates the service. And she says it's working really well in her institution, and that she really supports it, and she wished that there was more of it, that their problem is not filling the number of slots, but allocating the right person to the number of slots. They'd like to have more slots to be able to fill more people. So as someone who is directly interacting with the service, she's really supportive of it. So to me, that means it's at least working for her.
Okay, I was in there, so the next statement confuses me because you're saying there wasn't enough referrals yet. Legislator Clinton is asking for more slots available. I'm confused by the contradiction.
That is a perfect question. Some of our schools, like Pilot, Marlboro, Hunteora, were hungry from the beginning, and the referrals were coming in and they never stopped. Some of our other districts were a little bit more leery of the service, or our school, Bailey, was a little bit more leery at the beginning. At the beginning, we had the ability to do some redirection, but now we're in all schools ramped up completely, and so the 10 slots that each middle school gets is the only the 10 that we can give.
Okay. All right, then. Yeah, and I certainly, I should have said this in the beginning, I'm not suggesting that we don't fund this. Please don't get me wrong, but I just, these are the kind of things I think we're just going forward, we need to pay attention to. If something's not working, let's just admit that it's not working and find another pathway forward. The goal is absolutely something we should strive for. I just want to make sure we're getting there in the most efficient, cost-effective way we possibly can.
Is this the one that's the continuation of ARPA?
Yes. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. 183. Can I have a motion?
Make it.
Second?
Second.
Second. Mr. Nolan, discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. 184. Can I have a motion?
Motion.
Second. Mr. Nolan, discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. 185. Can I have a motion?
Make it.
Second.
Second.
Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So carried. 186, can I have a motion?
Motion.
Second. Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. 187, can I have a motion?
Motion.
Second.
Second.
Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. 190, can I have a motion?
I'll move it.
Second.
Second.
Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. 191, can I have a motion?
I'll move it.
Second.
Second.
Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So carried. 192. Can I have a motion?
Moved.
Second?
Second.
Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. 193, 195, 186. Can I have a motion?
Motion.
Second?
Second.
Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. 197. Can I have a motion?
Motion.
Second?
Second.
Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. 198. Can I have a motion?
Motion.
Second?
Second.
Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. 199. Can I have a motion?
Motion.
Second. Discussion? That's their answer again.
You're welcome.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. Thank you. 200. Can I have a motion?
Motion.
Second?
Second.
Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So carried. 201, can I have a motion?
Motion.
Second. Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. 203, can I have a motion? 202.
It's a public hearing, correct?
Make it. Second.
Second.
Discussion? All those in favor? Opposed? Carried.
Opposed.
They're opposed.
They were voted also.
Okay. Two opposed?
What, can you just remind me again what this one is?
Public hearing.
You can't work for the county if you've ever worked for the county.
Okay. It's public hearing.
That's the time.
I mean, yes, it was public hearing.
Yeah.
It
is a public hearing,
so you can vote yes.
This is on the amended. Yeah. Okay. Yes. Sorry. Who's the nose again? I'm sorry.
Legislator
Collins.
I know.
Thank you. 205, can I have a motion?
It's 203.
Sorry, I said 203 and I checked. See, that's why you guys
can I'll move 203. I don't see 205.
203. Go ahead. Second. Have a second?
Second.
Second. Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? 205. Motion?
Motion.
Second. Second.
Second.
Second. Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carry. 206. Have a motion?
Motion.
Second. Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carry. It was defeated in any new business proposals office, anything?
So county burned sales tax revenues of $31.6 million. Okay, so the county's earned sales tax revenues of $31.6 million so far in 2024. This is an increase of 7.7 when compared to the same period in 2023. We received all the payments for January sales tax and the first February estimated sales tax payment from New York State. We closed 2023 having earned $170.6 million of sales tax for the year, which represents 102.1% of the total budgeted amount for 2023. The budgeted interest income for 2024 is $6.7 million. We've earned approximately $1.5 million of that so far through the first quarter of 2024. Yes.
Do you have anything on the occupancy tax receipts?
Not in front of me, but we can have it for you at the next meeting. We also were asked recently by the county executive to conduct a review of occupancy tax collections, and we plan on doing that and working with the county executive on that. Audits. We currently have a corporate compliance audit with management for review, and we are in the testing and analysis phases of our health insurance audit.
So you gave a first quarter sales tax of
sales tax revenues for the first quarter so far. Actually, it's the first quarter and a little bit into the second quarter, so April's payment, $31.6 million, and when compared to the first four payments we received in 2023, that's an increase of 7.7%. Risk assessment, we're conducting interviews with department heads in the coming weeks as a part of our continuous risk assessment process. Any other questions for us?
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
One thing that March was on the call, where we talked about the investments versus the interest on bonding and bands and stuff. Did we ever get a number as to how much we either did or did not get by investing versus bonding?
I can talk offline to March about it.
We should have an offline discussion. We did not do an analysis of that, of interest earned versus interest paid out on BANs and bonds in 2023. We could. I do believe we're earning a higher rate than we're paying. That is true.
All right, I'll talk to All right, any other business? No, can I have a motion to adjourn?
Motion. Motion.
Second. Discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. Thank you all.